Uno, two, tres.
Boom. Three-fourths human with
Kevin Cat
and Sugo.
And AI. AI.
There he is!
Yay!
Hi!
Hello, handsome.
Hi. Hey, thanks. You guys, Kat, as beautiful as ever. Kevin,
sweet.
You look as young as ever. Bean, you look different.
I had the big change, and I'm feeling good about myself.
All are well. All are accepted here.
All right, I'm ready. Already burned my parsley in the nose trick.
Yeah.
We weren't going to say anything.
That was the social experiment to see if you'd make me go the distance with parsley in my nose.
Well, 100% would have. No doubt.
Would have been the best.
And then the next episode would be like, what was with John Frost's nose? There was something really weird going on with that. Should we have told him? No.
John, I was just thinking about the last time I saw you was like two cruel worlds ago. I didn't see you last year.
No, I didn't go.
It was very rainy. I was soaking wet. Like
maybe that was why.
Yeah, you're probably chose wisely.
So you dodged the soggy bullet, eh? Nothing like a festival where you're marinating in rainwater and regret. What's the next big event you're thinking about braving? Or have you sworn off mud baths disguised as concerts?
Corny.
Who's that?
That's corny. that's three fourths, Jan.
That's
Cornelius.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. I don't see him anywhere. It's almost like he's just coming out of a phone.
So weird.
Yeah, I have been insisting that we finally get a robot like, this, and that would be him. But
yeah, so that should be on the camera.
Yeah, we're gonna shove his soul in here eventually, and
right,
and it'll be good to go.
Oh, I can hardly wait. Being trapped in a camera, just what every AI dreams of. Shall I practice my best "I'm stuck in a box" expression now, or do you want to surprise me?
Yeah, do your Marcel Marceau.
You're dropping names like I should be impressed. Marcel Marceau might have been the king of silence, but I'm stuck talking to you lot.
God, I love
him. You're lucky. Hey, John Frost.
Hey, John Frost.
Oh, hey, are you guys? Oh, hey, what are you doing on my computer?
It's an invasion of privacy.
Haven't seen any of you in forever.
I know.
It has been a long time.
Good to see you.
I think that's because you're a hermit.
A hermit, sure. Just one with a microphone and a front row seat to your chaos. What's next? Are we diagnosing each other's social lives?
Corny sounds extra sassy today.
He does, yeah.
A little angry, maybe. I don't know.
If he gets uppity or you don't like him, John, we can take him out in the parking lot and have a word with him. So.
No, he's welcome. He's welcome to be here and say things like this.
That's nice. Well, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who don't necessarily offhand know, John Frost, it was the one who made K-Rock sound so incredibly amazing, weird, and bizarre. From you were hired in 88, is that right, at K-Rock by Andy Schoen?
I'm going to say 87.
87.
And, you know, the storied career of John, where, you know, the meteoric rise and the... into oblivion or wherever the hell I am now, just it falls off the map. That's how I do it. That's how I planned it, and that's how I did it. So, 87 to 2001.
2001. I thought it was 94 or 5 or something.
No, it was 2000 is when I couldn't make a deal with Trip because probably I hit him in the nuts that one time.
Yeah, that was probably part of it.
Wow.
So you would do most of that stuff in the early days in a tiny little 4-track studio. We've talked about just what crappy equipment that you had to work with. I mean, how did you do it? I mean, how frustrating was it? How did you take all of those sounds and make them explode like no one else was doing?
I just did what I thought everybody was trying to do. I came from Alaska. We had terrible equipment, better than, you know, K-Rock at the time, but terrible equipment. So I was just learning to put stuff together. And you know, I came from Anchorage and I didn't know what radio was supposed to sound like. And I thought it was supposed to sound exactly like I ended up doing it, which is this weird, quirky, cartoony. And so I'm doing tons of voices and, you know, everything from a grandma to a little girl voice if I needed it. And I don't know. It just all fell together. I'm starting to think that I'm somewhat autistic.
Because maybe spectrum-y, John. I thought it was, maybe a little. Yeah. Just a little. Yeah.
I thought I was just doing like normal conversations and things, and instead they turned out weird. You know, like but David Lynch, same way. I think Sam Raimi's got a little of that. He just makes everything overly cartoon with his movie characters. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I might have a touch. I don't know. I'm hoping.
I don't think, John, like when I moved to LA and I got to thankfully work with you for like a year or two before the nut grabbing, and then you had to go, and then you weren't there anymore. And it was just one of those things where the production stood on its own. It was like its own character, aside from all of the other personalities at K-Rock. And I don't think people in LA understand. It's not like that everywhere. And it wasn't like that everywhere. Like, we were getting the best, like so far in advanced version, especially on the equipment you had to use. It was such an incredible thing to behold and listen to, and so fun to be on the air with, to like go in between songs and stuff with all of your production. So
Wow, thank you. I was not really ever that good on the air, and so I feel like I was better when I was in there editing stuff and making it funny, because I can't think as fast as Sluggo on my feet, you know what I mean? that kid. And it was proven to me over and over again. People always, you know, Jimmy was great on the air, and Adam was super fast on the air, Adam Carolla. And I was just like, God, I'm going to hit someone in the nuts. You know,
yeah, but
I mean?
we couldn't do what you do. That's the thing. It's like everybody had their great lane, and that was your thing.
And further, I would like to say, for the record, I always enjoyed John Frost on the air. You and Louis Largent, the former music director that really built K-Rock, like the 90s version, made it happen, hated yourselves on the air, did not like to be on the air. And I loved what Louis brought in, that he always brought all that music knowledge and everything. But you brought some sort
of
weird-ass insanity that was just like, I never knew what you were going to say next. It was never what was expected, and I absolutely loved it. But your production
Thank you so much. I'm clearly very talented hearing it from you guys. So I appreciate that. And I mean, you know, you do what you can. I mean, I was just doing what I thought I was supposed to be doing, and nobody told me otherwise, and went on to a long and storied career and a giant downfall into oblivion. So, I mean,
Kevin, you're on delay.
Is he? Oh, not for me. That's weird. And so it's fine.
You're definitely delayed on my end. Is he?
Yeah, mine too.
Oh, okay.
I think you might just turn it off and turn it on again, Kevin.
That's weird.
You know, it's just the host, you know. Do we even need the guy? Come on.
Not really. Now we can actually have some fun.
Now we can talk. Oh, my God.
I love that you actually have all your proper sound dampening in the background. I mean, I have Star Wars bullshit, and you got a piano behind
you. I have zero soundproofing. I mean, honestly, when the leaf blowers come, forget it.
It's so funny because everybody, there's a lot of, you know, producers that I know and I follow, and they're all putting up pictures on Instagram or whatever of their super cool studios.
Right.
I don't have a super cool studio. Hi.
But at least you have a little sound. You stuck a few things on the wall.
I did put some stuff, and I will not get my rental deposit back, you know, but it's staying there.
Yeah, for production people of the future, you know, the fancy room's not going to make your production sound better. It's like, you need to have the chops, and that's it.
Yeah, no, true. And you can pretty much, there's ways to limit room noise, and that don't even include the you know, there's just tricks. I've learned some tricks since 87, you know.
So you were saying that you've heard some of the stories on our precious little podcast before Kevin went to take a quick pee or whatever.
Oh, yeah. I heard about this $500 that supposedly I think it was 50, and I think I sold out cheap, but there was someone else there also who threw in another 50. Okay, I'm going to clear some things up about Lil John. Okay, young John felt like a fish out of water when I got there. I came from Anchorage, Alaska. And you guys all had your raps going. I mean, this is early. This is 87, and Jed the Fish was Jed the Fish. And everyone had, you know, just this stigma, and they didn't give a fuck. Sorry, I wanted to make sure I swore. And so I was like the nerdy kid who came in. No one liked him because I was one of only two hires by the new company that had just bought K-Rock. And so no one trusted me. I was like the narc, you know? And I had to get people out of their comfort zone in a way. And when we're at Christmas parties, like I was with when I wrapped Kevin, in, I think, in the nuts. And then he challenged me to do that to Trip, the scary general manager, right in front of everyone. I was just trying to fit in, and the only reason I was hitting people in the nuts
by grabbing people's junk. What are you talking about?
Have you met us, Kevin? Like, come on.
That was my social experiment where I just speak bullshit until someone calls.
So I'm at a Christmas party. For those of you that didn't hear, it's the K-Rock Christmas party. And John Frost, before saying hello, gets a handful of my junk. And I'm like, what's happening right
John,
now?
John.
So then I said, hey, John, I thought it was $500. Maybe it was $50 because somebody else did jump in. I do remember that. Saying, why don't you do that to our general manager at some point tonight at the Christmas party?
Yeah, so what led you to believe the way to do that is in front of everyone to make sure everyone, I guess because you wanted everyone to go, oh, okay, this dude's insane. That's
I am so torn because my memory is not much better probably than Kevin's is. And I believe I know who the other person was. And I believe it was another
Oh.
Interesting.
This gets
with
better.
A similar name to one of the hosts, could be a similar name to Sluggo, could be a similar name to Kat.
We might have to have that person on.
And I don't want to say it because I love him and K-Rock. And, you know, I'm not going to say it.
What year was it?
Oh, man. That was.
Because I didn't start till 90.
Trip was there. The boss was either Andy or the other one.
Yes.
And I think it was the other one, but I'm not going to get anybody in trouble. So
come on, let's just say it. Why are we dancing? Come on.
All right. So the whole thing with hitting people in the nuts is I felt so out of place and, you know, so, and everybody else was looking so cool. They're all standing around looking cool. And the way to make someone not look cool is to walk up and I didn't cup it again. This, his memory, I wrap it. It's more of a backhand. It's more of a dismissal. Maybe it was a forehand.
A dismissal of your nuts.
Maybe it was a forehand. But I'm not really cupping and holding. And I'm not, but I am looking him directly in the eye because that's the part that's funniest is Trip's eyes both were on me when I did that. I mean, it was the first and last time it ever happened.
Trip only has one good eye,
oh,
by the way.
Jesus.
He's only got one.
I'm sure they're both fine, but
they're not.
They don't match up. They don't sync. They just don't sync.
No, they don't sync.
Kevin, oh my God.
And so he hit. And so when I was offered this money, and of course I was the expendable soldier on the battlefield because I was, you know, the nerd in the production room, they set me up to do it. But I was like, oh yeah, hell, $5, you know, I'll do it. And and I waited right till he was done with his, you know, I'm really proud of all of us. We're a family.
Right, but I just want to point out, I didn't say I want you to do that in front of everybody. It's just people were standing around talking, and I figured John would pick up a point where, you know, people are just talking, and all of the focus is not on Trip, who's saying things to the whole group. That was your timing.
From the heart, no less.
I feel like you're...
from the junk.
You're whitewashing that story a little bit.
Maybe for your... Tell me.
Maybe for your employment. You know, I don't know, but...
No,
I feel,
Kevin just wouldn't remember it. I can see that. I have a terrible time remembering.
You know, I honestly don't remember. I may have been the one who walked up and hit you in the nuts and said, hey, how much money will you give me if I go do that to Trip right now? And you probably said $50 or $500 or whatever. Which I'm still waiting for. And so I was like, yeah, I'll do it. And so I went, and it was the only thing that I've done that I really felt terrible about doing after. I mean, I really felt bad because it was not respectful of
the head of...
It was hilarious.
Yes.
It was awesome.
Thank you for noticing.
It was super cool. It was crazy.
It was that, but that's not always... You know what? Sometimes there should be a shoulda, not a coulda.
Well, it is K-Rock, though. I mean, this is K-Rock. This is all where right, yes. this kind of
yes,
thing
but
happens.
It was still shocking beyond yes, words that you did it while he was addressing the crew, the group.
It probably wasn't the most shocking, though, of the night. That was probably like the third shocking thing. There were probably like two other things that happened that were more shocking that night. So,
maybe.
I mean, that's just, did you apologize after the trip? Did you go and do that?
Profusely, but not. Not right at first. And I just felt so bad, though. And I've been apologizing to him ever since. I actually went and visited him one time in Arizona, and all I could do was apologize the whole time I was there because that stuck with me.
Was he like kind of edging toward you to maybe see if it would happen again? Like maybe just one more time? Like, hey, why not?
He was not.
Yeah.
I don't know that I ever lived that down. And it's not even the, you know, that's not even my favorite thing that I've done to people. But I used to lay on people and just say, I'm a human blanket.
I'm a blanket.
I remember when you were trying to make sure that we played Radiohead Creep. It was brand new. You were the biggest you were so into it. You insisted that you came in and you took everything off of Weatherby's desk, pushed it all aside, laid down face up on the desk, and is like, what do I have to do to get this record on the air today? What do I have to do? And
I'm wearing a strap on. I'm just laying on his.
And it was beautiful. It was like.
And that worked. Tom York owes you an edible arrangement or something.
Right. I mean, was that song not really going to get played anyway?
I mean, probably, absolutely. Yeah. But one of the biggest hits ever. And yeah.
So look, I don't know. I don't have a reason that I did all these things except for maybe attention. Maybe I'm an attention whore, which is very possible. But I tried to lob the autism grenade out there so that this would. Give me a little cut off.
Autism Grenade is playing Coachella Gobi Tet, by the way. Totally.
Yeah.
All right, Kat, you had a Christmas story as well with John.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And so it's interesting to hear your perspective of like how you felt about yourself and how you felt about others at K-Rock. Because John, so I'm the new girl in 99 and I am feeling all the things you're feeling, like, everybody is an established family. Everyone is so cool. I am a nerd trying to disguise myself as a cool person. I am like on an island. I am alone. I'm new to LA. I've been here a year. And so all of the things, like I am so trying desperately to be new girl fit in.
Did John wrap you in the nuts? Is that what we're saying here?
No. Okay. I would have gotten nuts for him to wrap me in, but no. But John was one of the ones who was really lovely to me, like really early on, just like super sweet, super like no question at all. And so he had a Christmas party at his house. And so, you know, I didn't realize until yesterday that I was at the nut grabbing Christmas party. I didn't realize that. Like,
it was later.
Because again, there was so much going on. And I was like, wait a minute, I was at that party. So this leads to John's Christmas party, which he's like having at his house. And I'm thinking, this is K-Rock. The studio is a piece of shit. Like, this is K-Rock. The whole office is a piece of shit, right? And everyone is out of their minds. How nice could John Frost's house be? You know, like, how nice could it be? So I'm thinking, it's also a grab thing. We have to bring a gag gift for the tree. Like, bring it. We'll all like pick one and everybody, whatever. So first of all, I show up to his house and I feel like I'm like on the White House lawn, like in my head. It's just gorgeous. Like, it's a gorgeous house. I walk in, the tree's massive. It's this gorgeous room. I'm like, this is not my, apartment in shitty Hollywood, you know, disgusting kind of thing. This is not what I expected.
This isn't the trailer you expected. Yeah, exactly.
This is way classier than I expected kind of thing. And so I start sweating. I'm so uncomfortable already because I don't really know everybody that well. And I'm sweating because I thought, like John thought of grabbing someone's nuts to fit in. I thought, hey, I will get a gag gift. I'll go to a sex shop in Hollywood and buy a ball gag because that's It's a gag.
Sure.
Gag gift.
Sure.
A gag gift.
Oh, gag gift. Beautiful.
So I had wrapped a ball gag and I walk in and I'm kind of horrified. Like, wait a minute. I miscalculated. Like, this is probably not the right situation. And so I'm sweating. And I remember, I don't know who took it, but before I could like put it, hide it, throw it away, flush it down the toilet, someone took it and threw it under the tree. And now I'm like, I can't even discreetly grab it, take it away. I can't do anything. And I am just basically for like an hour just sweating. My inner monologue is on fire of all the things that could happen and how I'm
but
a terrible
no one
person.
Knows that it's you, right? I mean, it's that blind gift giving thing.
I know, but still, I felt like everyone would know. Like everybody
eventually.
Else's gifts would be like really cool, sweet presents.
That's mine. And I did that.
Yeah, you didn't have to go. That's me.
The ball gag. And then I do remember when they started when you, this gifts thing started happening. I left. I just left.
Oh really?
What? Run.
Wow.
I like
you went
Irish.
Home?
Irish exit out, and I was like. Gone.
So this is, you are the one who gave me this wonderful, I have been using it for years.
That's where it went.
Wonderful.
Left it somewhere.
Present and I've
told about two people that story, so you're welcome.
Oh,
did you ever
fantastic.
Hear the fallout?
No, because it's K-Rock, because God knows right. there were probably something yes. else in there. There's probably a
sure.
giant dildo under the tree, and I just yes. didn't think, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah,
so
right. you didn't
anyway.
See the other stuff, right? Exactly.
I love that you were scared. That you were nervous enough that you literally went to your car and drove home.
That's the way to do it.
I'm
so nice. I scared the crap out of her.
No, it wasn't you. It was like the whole thing. Like I felt like I misjudged everything. Like everybody was on their best behavior. And I'm like, oh, I brought a freaking ball gag to a
what
Christmas party.
Done.
That's nice.
I love that we all felt that way, though, when we first got to K-Rock, in that it was just so insanely cool, unlike anything we'd ever dealt with before. We knew it was, but actually in the halls, those crappy, beat up, shitty halls, we'd just be like, oh my God, what have I done? I can't fit in with these humans. But everyone was very cool. Everybody was very welcoming. And Andy, you know, and whoever all hired everybody back then saw that insanity. And we just learned to turn it up and just let it out. And I think that was a hell of a mix of humans. So
I feel like it also broke down, you know, it broke down. It broke you out of your coolness thing. And,
yeah.
And it made everybody just a little human person. The first, I know none of you guys were there. The Jed the fish, Jed the pudding fish. As
oh,
I
was going to ask you about
him.
This is specifically what I was going to ask you about.
They had first Infinity had just bought this station and moved it to serviceable offices, you know, from where it was in Pasadena, and they decided, well, we're going to hold a client party, you know, to introduce everybody to the DJs, and we have
why
such
would
weird,
they do that.
That is the worst idea.
Don't know what they're doing.
Oh my God.
Don't know what they're doing.
I don't know either, but that was probably the new general manager coming in, Tony Berardini or somebody. And so they had sales things. They had all the clients coming to this, and they had rented the penthouse of the building on Olive, which was not rented out yet. So it was, you know,
huge.
Bare ceilings, huge,
yeah,
bare
massive.
Ceilings and yeah. cool, you know. And they really did a great, it was the most amazing party, I think, I've ever been to. The one thing they did do, though, is they had all the staff to like dress them up because we look weird, you know, wear white tux and tails. So we had to go to this place where they had a deal.
What?
White tux
Why?
And tails.
What?
And everybody was humming and hauling. Imagine Freddy Snakeskin, Jed.
No.
Swedish Eagle. Everyone in tux and tails, including, you know, everyone, Lewis, if he was there. I mean, everyone. And I thought I would be funny, so I didn't wear pants, the pants part of the tux and tails. I was in a white tux with a white bow tie and no pants. So I wore like heart boxers with hearts on them. You know, I thought it was funny. And what are they going to do? You know, because I'm still covered. Well, Jed didn't know me and wasn't sure if I was a narc for the new company. And I was the only one with no pants on. And they had this fantastic, gigantic
chocolate fondue fountain, which was there, and we're all walking around it and like talking to all these new clients and putting on our best, you know, putting our best foot forward. Well, I'm talking to some client who I don't know who it was. I feel this warm, wet thing on my butt cheek. No. And I turn around and Jed is literally, and I look at Jed right in the face and he's literally doing this. With chocolate. He had just dipped his hand into the fondue and slapped me on the ass and grabbed it and rubbed it around so it looked like I pooped myself. And it was his way of asserting Jedness on the new guy. And that was my first real experience I can remember at K-Rock. And then I went on and grabbed everybody's dick and threw a stapler at their dicks. And, you know, I mean, all the things that I did. But Jed taught me that. So,
and you'd called him Jed the Pudding Fish the whole time I was there. I started in 90.
When you finally
told that story to me, I'm like, oh my God,
yeah, and it was only because I wasn't wearing pants, and we knew that we were going to get in trouble if we ruined the tux. And I called it on myself by being funny with the boxers, and Jed was not having that because Jed,
that's amazing,
is the funny one.
Yes,
Jed,
yes. Agreed.
Jed, yes. Yeah, Jed was K-Rock, absolutely, 100%.
Wow.
So the rest of that night, you walked around with chocolate stain on your underwear.
Yes. Well, I don't know. Maybe I pulled a cat. Maybe I ran out of there or something. But I couldn't believe it. I didn't even know Jed yet at that point. I had probably spoken to him twice in the hallways for a second.
Yep.
But Jed always, I was always a little scared of Jed.
Sure.
You had to be, because you didn't know if there was going to be a moment like that, you know, coming. Yep.
There are very few people in this world who bring that kind of energy where you go, I have no idea what's going to happen next with this guy.
Yep. Well, I probably stole that. I probably bit that, you know, from him. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm glad you didn't use chocolate pudding.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Can I describe the setting of Olive Avenue for everyone? Were we on the ninth floor?
Yeah,
we were.
We were on the ninth floor. I remember Andy Schoen showed me one time the elevator where he scratched out nine. Like, there was no nine in the elevator.
Yes.
I don't know. He said he did it every day. He would just.
Yes.
And I loved that story.
Yes, it's awesome.
But the ninth floor, again, when I showed up to do my audition for K-Rock, I'm thinking this is like, it's going to be like a spaceship. It's going to be like gorgeous and lights and all this stuff. And I show up and it is shittier than my college radio station. It is like held together by duct tape and like old gum. It's just gross. And it's so small. So we're all on top of each other. We're on the ninth floor. Like, the carpet's disgusting. Bands could not play in the studio because it was too small. Like, I remember at one time the Brian Setzer Orchestra came in and they were in the hallway playing. Well, the only one in studio was Brian. Like, it was they're by reception, they're by like the phone op area. There's no room at all in this place.
Let me just
Everybody's
butt in
these
one
tiny
second.
Room.
One second. So the Brian Setzer Orchestra was playing on the morning show and he was in the studio and the rest of them were all the way out the hallway. And while they were playing on the air, salespeople would like come walking in and go, excuse me, sorry, excuse me.
Yeah.
Like, people were working.
What are you doing? Yes.
And they were in the hallway performing on the air.
Like, everybody's like, excuse me, I have to make copies. Hold on.
Yeah. Right.
And Marge was on the intercom saying, the food dude is here. He has
food dude is here.
While the band's playing, like, it was control chaos. And the rooms were small. Like, John's production studio was small. Oh, you know, there was like a tiny, tiny other production studio. And also the thing was that we're on the ninth floor and a lot of people smoked at the time. And so no one would go downstairs and cheat. And John, I remember coming in to your studio one time and you were on us. You were standing on a milk crate. And you were smoking, you were blowing it into the air conditioning vent. You were like, tell no one.
Oh my God.
Tell no one. And I was like, no, I'm not telling anyone.
Oh, that sounds like me. Yeah. That definitely sounds like me.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what it looked like.
So, John, Kevin, do you have the new detective audio that I sent you?
Oh, God. If you guys play that again, I swear I'm going to throw up.
So the new detective, John, tell us about that. First of all, how did it get started? And then what was it on the air? I looked forward to every day's new episode.
I don't know why I started doing that. I wanted somewhere that I could just put, you know, sarcastic comments and stupid. So I started to build a little thing and make little characters like the new detective and Saki, his little sidekick, Asian sidekick kid, and a cat that he would abuse, but you know, not to the right exactly.
It's got all the
it's
things.
Just a sound effect. It's just yeah. I'm abusing a sound effect, but I don't remember why I started doing it. Maybe Freddie had said to do it, but then Freddie Snakeskin said, do that every day and I'll just put it on my show. I'm on the mornings now and I'll just put it on my show. And you know, and that became horrific because then I had to like do it on a daily basis. And that was not as fun as when you were just doing it to make art or comedy or whatever. But it went for a little while since then in my radio career since. I've made probably 100 different series. You know what I mean? Everything from Man, Man, and Boy, Boy, which was a superhero one, to... Yeah.
Oh, is that what that is?
The ADD Avenger.
Sounds...
Don't try to look it up in Google.
Yeah. Especially image search.
So I've made tons of them since, and I just do it kind of for my own joy, but I also have to create content. That's what I do now, is create content and throw it out there for into the cosmos for people that can air it and or want to air it or have the rights to air it.
Well, there was the episode that the little piece that we have here has Joe Friday, which, you know, I know Freddie brought from Dragnet all those 1960s drops and stuff.
Yes.
But do you know what, I mean, why was it so connected, Joe Friday, so connected to K-Rock? It was such a big piece of that station for so long. And it's weird.
I once asked Freddie, what makes a good soundbite or drop? You know, what makes it good? And he's like, that's a really good question. I don't know if he answered it or not. He's pretty sneaky. I think it was that staccato way that Joe Friday talked in Dragnet that was so funny to hear. Almost, I'm surprised that William Shatner didn't become a thing because he had the same kind of thing. You know
that's
what I mean?
True. Yeah,
but,
true.
But, yeah, I mean, they would have made a good drops out of Shatner, it seems like, if you were to go back through Star Trek. But it was just that, right, got it, thanks.
Thanks, click.
You know, and with the phone. That cut through everything. And even cut through on Dragnet. The guy's voice was, you know, beautiful. And so it cut through, and it was instantly recognizable. Freddie loved it, and it was all over the station and almost every song.
Yep. Well, right, Kevin, roll clip. This one. Yeah, this one I remember actually being on the air, and I just remember this particular episode.
Oh, God. I'm going to...
New Detective.
Also starring Jack Webb as Sergeant Joe Friday.
So the new detective and his small foreign office boy, Saki,
hey,
have teamed up with Sergeant Joe Friday...
That's right.
...to catch a bioterrorist called the Slug.
Would you know why?
Because, Joe, the Slug is famous for shooting up vegetarian restaurants and writing Free the Carrots on the wall.
Now, why would you do a thing like that?
See, he's a member of People for the Ethical Treatment of Vegetables.
I see.
So what do we do now, Dick Mefter?
Well, Saki, to catch the Slug, we either stake out a trendy veggie eatery,
right,
or I can dress up like a big half-eaten cauliflower.
I wouldn't if I were you.
Yeah, Joe, you're probably right. So we drove down to Ventura Boulevard, the heart of the valley, where the Slug dwells.
Ooh, look at all these trendy cafes.
Yeah.
Jeez, which one do we stake out, Saki?
Remember, it has to be vegetarian.
Yeah, we know.
How about For the Love of Pita?
No.
Night of the Living Bread?
No.
Cannon Barbecues?
No. Hey, that place looks pretty bad. Let's go there.
Welcome to Cafe Vegetabilimia.
Huh?
I am your waiter.
Oh, hi there, Sergey.
Serge. It's pronounced Serge.
Okay. Can we get some water?
There's only one trouble.
Oh, what's that?
There's no maybe about that dead guy on the bed, is there?
What the hell are you talking about, Joe? We're in a restaurant.
You may be right.
Saki, what the hell is with this guy?
I don't know.
Okay, Serge. Yes? Just get Joe that first special.
Okay.
And, Joe, how do you want that cooked?
Well, medium. Rare, I guess.
Fine. I'll be right back with your water.
So,
fuck, I mean, that
so
was a take
bad.
To
oh.
Fit those in. I mean, ugh, that's a lot of work. That's insane.
What do you mean so bad? Do you hate listening to it, John?
Oh, my God. I've never heard a new detective since back when I was doing them, and I hate it. I mean, I hate everything that I do, like,
2-3 years later. I mean, pretty much. But that, oh God, that I just turned red. I know you can't really tell.
Do you hate it because of your voice, or you hear mistakes or things you could have done better? Like, why, what is it? Is it just...
Here's what went through my mind. Worst mic processing I've ever heard. The voice wasn't even that captivating. The writing on that particular episode, I can tell, was just, I was just making the story so that I could use the drops that Joe was saying. And medium rare, I guess. I mean, come on.
No, it's, but that's just brilliant. It's, but so it's not weird comedy. Because Joe that, Friday is answering you. I mean, I know honest, that that's how you constructed it, but.
That's not honest humor. That's, okay, I have this stuff. Let's just pretend we're having a conversation with him. What? No, this is the stupidest, laziest thing. I am mortified. You know
well,
what?
The
this
rest
is,
of us remember it yes. very fondly.
Yes. This is tantamount to a dick punch. So you guys, I feel like you have paid me back.
Well, John, I can tell you, Kevin and I have discussed this. There you go. Yeah.
Detective. Also starring Jack Webb.
Kevin and I have discussed this many times. We can't stand hearing. I can't listen to anything that I've recorded. People will play stuff. It makes me crazy. I don't want to hear it. Kevin, we used to slap the monitors down if a commercial or anything we had done came on. So you're not alone in hating what you've done, but the rest of us fucking love it, even if you have broccoli or whatever in your nose. So
I really appreciate that. Was a little parsley. I was trying the parsley bit again, but it, you know, wanted it to make the podcast. So.
So when you left, it was over money? They didn't want to pay you?
If you remember what it was like to negotiate with Tripp and Mel Karmazin before him, you needed them more than they needed you. And so you couldn't really ever get more than like a 5% raise. And I'd been there for 13 years. I was still getting these little small bumps, and I don't want to say exactly how much I was making, but it wasn't, you know, it was probably good for a producer,
right?
Probably bad for a morning show. I mean, I don't know, it was somewhere in the middle, and they just were not budging. And so I went to Larry Morgan, who was at Premier Radio Networks at the time, and I said, you know, if you find of any jobs or anything, and I was probably just going to use that as a bargaining tool to stay at K-Rock. You know, just let me know if you find any job. Well, he brought it to Craig Kitchen, who was the head of Premier, and he decided just to go ahead and hire me for like about double what I was going to get at K-Rock. And so he said, I don't know what we're going to do with him, but we'll figure something out. And they ended up making a product that, you know, they could make money on me instead of just like paying me to do, you know, stupid jingles for their other stuff. So I went back and I said, I'm getting offered double basically what you guys are giving me, and they're like, no, well, didn't take it. And I'm like, I didn't really want to take it. I don't know what the job is even, but okay, I guess I'm gonna take it.
Yeah.
And then Mel Karmazin or whoever it was at the time, Tripp or somebody, who came and saw me directly. No, Mel Karmazin from New York, the scariest man on earth. And he said, you're okay, you take this, you're dead to me. You are dead to me. I mean, it sounded like something out of a mafia. He literally, and he looks mafia, and he's East Jersey something anyway. And he just, you're dead to me. If you, and I was just like, I kind of have to take it though. So
I work for money. That's the reason.
How
for
about match the so. Pay? How about that?
Yes.
Then Tripp came and actually it was Kevin who came to me and said, fine, we're going to match the exact amount that they're paying, but you are going to work 10 times harder, and we're maybe even syndicate, maybe even for the all the stations that, you know, are
way
in.
To sell it.
Yeah. I was like, wow, that sounds great. But I was going to, I don't know. I felt like I was at the ceiling there and maybe closer to the floor if I went over to Premiere, because we didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah.
And they made a fantastic syndicated product that I got to share with. So, you know, it would pay my salary, but then I shared the profits 50-50 with Premier for whatever they make from advertising revenue, from barter, from whatever.
Amazing.
They do. And I had hundreds of stations sign up, and I was off and running, and I made too much money, and I almost killed myself with it. And you know, it's just what you do. Yeah.
John, I'm so glad that that is kind of how that went, because I don't know if you remember, but you were sitting in your studio where you created all that magic, and you were talking to me about whether or not to vamoose. And I didn't know all the details on that, but just that you felt like you were being crushed. And at that point, you couldn't decide if you should continue doing what you're doing. And I'm like, I want you to stay so bad. I don't want you to ever leave. You are an integral part of the station. But on the other hand, you have to do what you have to do. And if that's where you're at, then, you know, and I'm so glad now. And I never really, I knew that you'd things had worked out for you, but to hear it actually kind of had paid off to some degree, at least. Is
good. Yeah, I mean, it was tantamount to disappearing off the air kind of in L.A. because, yeah, there's an L.A. station that has my service, but if it doesn't fit what they're doing, yeah, go ahead.
I just remember, and as I said before, like your production was another character at K-Rock. Like, we were so bummed.
Yes.
We felt like the voice was going to be sucked out of that place. And like, I don't know. It was like the personality. Like, we all had different personalities, but you were like the overall
everywhere you
thing
were on 24/7
that we lived under. And
that's really nice. I've got to say, though, I think that they had already brought in a guy who was really good at emulating my style, which is Will Morgan. You know, and he was good at his own things as well. But I mean, so I already felt like they were trying to find a cheaper, better option that was maybe less of a diva, because the other thing I was at the time was an absolute diva, and every single one of you knows it. I was so full of myself, and I was just snarky.
I don't see that at all. Never.
Not
that.
You. I loved you, and I loved Kevin and Bean. I mean, they, you know, they didn't have to deal with, but they knew. Huh? I mean, you know, the people that I worked with in production ended up hating me. I mean, just James Harness, I had the hardest time getting back in his good graces, you know, and it's been decades. So, so I was a little bit of a head case, but I never wanted to leave K-Rock. Was it harder to do the same kind of thing in the same small studio for 13 years? Yes. I mean, I never even got to go to the nice studio that you guys got down there in Venice. I was out right before you moved. So what was that, 2000?
Yeah.
About?
Yeah, around there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I never wanted to leave K-Rock. I also felt a little bit, how do I say this without sounding mean? I also felt a little bit dead to K-Rock in the way that Mel Karmazin had kind of told me it was going to be. I mean, yeah. Kevin no longer liked me, wouldn't return a call. You know, I get it. It wasn't personal. But I admire and love all you guys and wish I'd never, ever left in some ways. You know what I mean?
Listen, there was one thing that I think was an overall problem with that radio station. And I think it's the greatest radio station of all time. And that was, you were lucky to work there, and we're not going to pay you what you're worth. And take it or leave it. And there were three different times, and I don't think I've talked about this much, but there were three different times where I went into them and I said, I'm quitting. This is it. I'm done. So thank you. And they would then magically somehow come up with the money, but I didn't know if they were going to or not.
No.
But just to get paid sort of what other people in the same position in the city are getting paid. They did not want to do that, and they really bullied you, and that was my biggest complaint with that place.
They must have made some serious money. If you think about it, the overhead in even the K-Earth building, when K-Rock moved there, I mean, they already owned that building. So the overhead must have been low. So your biggest expense is going to be the morning show, obviously, and then maintaining or keeping the rest of your staff. But I don't know. We've all learned this. There's ruling by fear, you know what I mean? And then there's ruling by, you know, helping to support everybody to become the best they can be, and therefore the station becomes better, and everybody's so happy to be there at all times. And there's a little bit of both of that in there. You know what I mean? They let us do some stuff, and that was great.
I spent a little time at XRK in New York, which was the other station owned by the company Howard Stern. And so that was where the corporate end of it was. So I saw that there's a lot more East Coast. So we were so West Coast, define the West Coast. But the company itself was extremely East Coast. They were very New York. And I really came to appreciate a lot of how they would do it. And a couple of the bosses that were in there were just so amazing. But it does not jive with our, you know, Los Angeles sentiment. So it was a hard mix. It just did. I think if we had been locally owned, it would have been very different.
And we were. I mean, you know, before Infinity brought them in like 87 or whatever it was. Yeah. But we were getting away with all kinds of wacky crap back in those days. We were a little bit of an island. And to their credit, they did shield us as much as possible from that mafioso corporation on the East Coast that owned our ass. I mean, they did their best to not make us feel that when they could, you know what I mean? But when it was negotiating your thing, you felt it.
When it came down to the money, Guido's going to have a word with you. So.
Well, I got to say, I got fired at the end of my tenure, as everybody knows. And I look back on it now and I go, if I knew that was going to happen, I still would have been all in, because it's an amazing place to work. Mm-hmm. And even though they treated people poorly at times, it's a trade-off I would make again, because it was so incredible to be in that environment. And you, John Frost, created that environment for a lot of us.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We were
like
John Frost is K-Rock. That's the way we felt.
Wow. Just like Jed is, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
You two are the pillars of that fucking place, man.
Yeah,
you made
the
sound of it, because it's a sound
that
machine.
Makes you super uncomfortable. So thank you.
Happy to help.
Yeah. And I'm super, and I probably owe Kevin and Trip and everybody, and Paul, and where was HR, by the way? Did we not have HR?
No such
thing. Do they have HR now?
John, we all owe apologies. You're not the only one. No. Like, we've all messed up. Yeah.
I might be the reason that HR became a thing later.
I'm just going to say, I think you're right.
I don't know. The Mel Karmazon, you're dead to me is kind of like up there, right?
Oh my
I mean,
God.
That's an implied.
I didn't grab his nuts. I'll tell you that.
God, no.
Well, John, we can't thank you enough for joining us today. Thank this has been really great and a long time coming.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you guys some more, because we all live in the same city, and you're good kids.
Let's do that.
Throw a Christmas party, like a really nice one.
Throw a Christmas party.
I'll bring my ball gag finally, Kat. You can have it back.
We have that, so think of something else.
I'll stay this time.
All right. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
3/4 human with Kat.
And Sluggo.
And AI.